I whipped around. Last time I did the whip is last time I did reverse. Pour the brown, hit the reverend. Last time I hit your crib. Last time it went no tears. I done went back in my cell, felt like hell. Fuck, I risked it, patient cell. Fire living, know you thrilling off a sentence. How I got my strikes and pendants back and out in the street. Born is wild, let it be. Rage is out, gotta eat. Not a vibe, but away with the sound. By the way, kinda down by the days to myself. Know they look it with the moves. I'm juke off the juice. No, I'm juke. I be smooth and I lose it. Yeah, yeah, nah, nah. Outside, I think our options up. I'm a perfect random map, I had to line it up. I be swerving on the waves, it's like a line of us. Move in verse on my turf, I'm out of line. I put in work, I draw the line and cross it first. I need the time, I need the search. It's just like wanting, make it work. Skirt, skirt, in a verse. Skirt, skirt, run a land. Boeing jet, make it land. It's slow motion when I dance. In your eyes, I see your trance. I run away and then you prance. If I show the hideaway, will you hide out and let it blam? Ain't no time, I'm facing scams. I'm not.
Well, a very good evening to you, ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys. MV Passion, bringing you guys the long-anticipated review of Christopher Nolan's Tenet. And Tenet, like I said, is a film that I saw, 4 months ago in September. I went to see this movie in theaters. Imagine that. I went to the theater during the pandemic to see The New Mutants because I'm a big Marvel guy. And I knew this movie was going to bomb. So I knew there was going to be not a fucking soul. So I went on a day. I think it was a Monday. There was nobody. So I went to see it, The New Mutants, because I'm just like a big Marvel chill. I went to see it. I really didn't like it. But I really like going back to the theater. And I said, you know, the next movie that I got to see in the theater is Tenet, of course. And I was very lucky to attend a private viewing of this movie. It will likely never happen again. But I was very lucky to have had that opportunity of going to see a movie all by myself before the theater even opens to the public. It was a weekday. It was the first week of September. It was a Wednesday. I went to see it. And I remember very vividly being extremely excited for it because this was my first time back in the IMAX theater for the first time since the big lockdown in March. So I was like really hyped for this movie. I'm a big fan of Christopher Nolan. I love Christopher Nolan. He's one of my favorite filmmakers working today. He keeps always pushing the boundaries of incredible action filmmaking, very complex stories, and actually, yes, I will say it, fantastic character development. I think the Dark Knight trilogy is you know, some of his best work. Dark Knight Rises, in my opinion, is his best movie. Not a lot of people think that way, but I do. I think it is fantastic. I rewatched it not too long ago. Actually, I rewatched it before I went to see Tenet. And, Dark Knight Rises is, for me, Christopher Nolan just at his peak, at his best, his very best. And while I was enthralled by the action sequences in Tenet, and that the action sequences that could very much rival his work in Dark Knight Rises. There was a big problem in my screening, and it wasn't just my screening. It was everywhere. Everybody complained about it, but mine was excruciating because I saw it in IMAX. It was the sound. I understood nothing, almost nothing. There were times where I was like, okay, I get it. But there were times, there's one scene, I remember very vividly, there's one scene where John David Washington, because he thinks he knows too much. He thinks Neil, played by Robert Pattinson, knows too much. He says, what do you know? Or something like that. And then he says something. It's like, you know, like it's because the dialogue is buried between loud, very loud music and loud sound effects. That it was completely painful. And I said to myself, like, how the fuck do you want me to enjoy this? I like, you know, what it does visually. It's a very beautiful looking movie. And, you know, like I said, the action sequences are completely out of this world. But, you know, I'm not understanding why they're doing this or why he's going inverted or why they're going to take this thing. What the fuck is going on? And so I was like, well, I give up. I'm not going to review this movie. I'm going to review this movie once I have seen it with subtitles, because it would be completely dishonest for me to review a film that I didn't understand. Not that I didn't understand, like, the story, because there are many films that I didn't understand the story, but I've watched it with quotes properly. No, that's fine. If the story is confusing, whatever. It's the film's problem, not the audio. But I didn't understand the audio. I couldn't understand the fucking movie because the audio was so bad. It was so fucking loud that I said, it's impossible for me to objectively review the movie. It's impossible for me to objectively review the movie because I couldn't understand any of the dialogues. I couldn't understand the story and the dialogues. It was so hard to follow. I said to myself, well, I'm going to have to wait to see it at home with subtitles. I was pissed. I was extremely pissed because this was my return to the IMAX theater. And so I complained about it. I said, there hasn't been in my history of seeing movies in IMAX. I've seen over 100 films in IMAX, maybe a little bit more. But in my history of seeing movies in IMAX, there hasn't been a bad experience. I complained. I complained about it to David Keeley, who is the quality czar. He is the chief quality officer at IMAX. You can actually send him an email. He's a very nice guy. Fantastic dude. He knows a lot about the technology. He's also Jeff Keighley's dad. Jeff Keighley, who hosts the Game Awards. So pretty big deal to be talking to him. But I was mad. I was mad as hell. I sent him an email. I said, look, David, it must be hard releasing a movie during a pandemic, but you have completely ruined my joy for going to the movies with this one film. It was so, the sound was so fucking shrill. It was unbearable. I mean, really. And he felt so terrible. He actually sent me two free emergency passes. I can't show them, but I have them. That I can't use because the theaters are closed. They're closed until January, but they're not gonna reopen in January. We've got over 2,000 daily cases. It was 1,500, but now it's going to 2,000. It's a lot. So they're gonna have to close down more shit probably. And so I'm gonna patiently wait to see Tenet at home with subtitles. And maybe I'll enjoy it better, right? No, I did not like Tenet, and I can say it now because I've seen it, I've read pretty much read the subtitles during the entire movie, but I've seen it with subtitles. I understood the dialogues perfectly. The sound was crystal clear, and this movie sucks. It's very painful to say that the movie sucks because it's made by Christopher Nolan. People are like, oh, Christopher Nolan. But Christopher Nolan has been acting like an ass since the beginning of the fucking pandemic. He's been wanting to shove this movie to theaters to desperately save them. And look what happened. Look at the result that he, his film specifically created. if it wasn't for his movie, maybe we could have been in a statistically better situation. But Tenet bombed domestically. It did so badly that now Warner Brothers is going to release all of their movies. It's so metaphorical. All of their movies, both in theaters and on HBO Max. Now, before I go, I talk about Tenet in depth, and the spoiler alert for Tenet, but not really, because the plot is so confusing. I'm gonna be saying a bunch of shit that don't make sense. Before I talk about this, what do I think of the HBO Max Warner Brothers thing? You know, for now it's fine. I mean, look, I'm stuck at home. The theaters are closed. If I was living in the United States, I would buy a subscription for HBO Max for a year, and I would probably enjoy this very much. But because I don't live in the United States, because theaters are closed until January 11th, and they will be closed, I believe, long after January 11th. Probably they will reopen in about, I will say, March, April, my best estimate. I can't go to the theater. I don't have HBO Max. What do I do? I desperately want to watch Wonder Woman 1984. What do I do? I ask for a screener? I mean, sure. I mean, I do have a few plugs, HBO Max plugs, that can give me a screener for the movie, but are they sending out screeners for the movie? That I know. I do have the HBO Max email that I can request screeners for, but, you know, again, screeners, I don't like screeners. I fucking hate screeners. No subtitles, watermarks. I'm forced to watch it on my computer when I want to watch it on my TV. Anyways, I don't like screeners. A lot of people make a big deal out of screeners, and I'm like, who gives a shit about screeners? There's this guy on Twitter. I don't remember what his name was. Let me just pull it out. He said the stupidest shit I saw. It was yesterday. He said the stupidest fucking shit. I honestly couldn't believe it, but I gotta find it. Shit. Ah, fuck. I gotta find it. Hold on a minute. Oh, Christ. He said, the film critics you follow are also upset about the HBO Max thing because the movie theater was the only place they got to see a movie without having their name and the date watermarked in giant letters across every actor's face. Guess what, idiot? No one's forcing you to watch screeners for movies. Of course, it gives you all the clout to brag about, but no one is literally forcing you to watch a screener. There are many publications that will mandate you a movie, say, okay, you're going to review this movie. And say, well, you don't need to review it right away. You can review it a couple of days before the movie comes out, or when the movie comes out, you can watch it, you know, legally without a screener and really appreciate it, right? But like, oh no, I have to watch screeners. No one is forcing you to watch screeners. You can watch a film on HBO Max. You can buy the HBO Max subscription just like anybody else and suck it up. I'm sorry, but suck it up. But you know, again, I can request for a screener, or if that doesn't work, What would I do? I really want to watch Wonder Woman. What do I do? Well, yo ho, I'll leave it at that. You know, and that's the problem. It will, I believe, open the floodgates for piracy. That's my biggest concern about this whole thing. Not even about cinemas. It's about opening the floodgate for piracy, and that is what's really going to kill the market. Because HBO Max, once again, HBO Max is only available in the United States. And I'm in a situation where cinemas are closed. I have a contact that I can use for screeners. But if that doesn't work, what do I do? You know what I'm going to do. So that's my thoughts on the whole thing. But that started with Tenet, with Christopher Nolan saying, I need to release my Keno in cinemas. I absolutely, oh my God. And he desperately pushed this film. He desperately pushed this film to be released in theaters. Like, Jesus Christ, I need this movie to be released for some fucking, I don't know. He wanted to be the guy that was going to save cinemas with this one movie. But never in film history is the film industry relied on this one specific movie to bring the audiences in. And when the reviews came in, they were very lukewarm. Some people really liked it. Some people didn't really like it. A lot of people complained about the sound, like I did in my first part. People weren't really enthused by it. Says, you know, I don't need to risk my life for this movie, so I'm not going to go see it. And then it bombed. I mean, the movie cost, I think, $200-something million. And it made like 300. We just see Yeah, $200 million made $357 million. It's a bomb. And normally Christopher Nolan doesn't do bombs. He may his films are very successful. If you look at his last film, Dunkirk. Dunkirk. The film cost $150 million. It made $526 million. Interstellar was $165 million and made $696 million. Dark Knight, you know, made over $1 billion at the box office. Okay. The dude makes money. All right. Christopher Nolan is a money maker. His films make money considering the budget that they're made in. This film made nothing. All right. And then when studios saw the results for Tenet, they were like, oh, no way I'm going to release Black Widow. So Disney pulled it. They pushed it back. No way I'm going to release James Bond. MGM Universal pushed it back. And then Warner Brothers is like, no way we're going to release Wonder Woman. We're going to push it back to Christmas, hoping things will get better. But no, we're just going to release it on HBO Max too and just say fuck it. And so not only have you got a movie that was supposed to save cinemas and it didn't save cinemas, it practically killed them. And now you've got, you know, one studio saying, well, we can't really release movies in cinemas for the next year because it's still going to be bad. Even if there's a vaccine, there will be a vaccine. So what do? We're just going to put movies on HBO Max and Bob's your uncle. And that's a big problem that the industry is facing right now. But it all started with this one movie, Tenet, a movie that's not even good. I'm sorry, it's not good. So what is Tenet about? I don't know. I have no idea. I genuinely have no idea what it's about. And that's one of the most frustrating aspects of this movie. The movie begins in an opera house in Kiev where a group of terrorists, I think, attack the opera house for something. I don't know. I think they're planning to blow it up. Is that it? And then there's the protagonist who's played by John David Washington. His name is the protagonist. Well, he's never named, but at one point he says, I'm the protagonist. But he's played by John David Washington, and he is there. He's a CIA operative, and he's undercover. He's working undercover, I think, to extract some guy at the opera house somewhere. I don't know, just a safe location, because I think Russians are trying to kill him or something. It's all very confusing, but the sequence is amazing, truly. The movie, I think, the movie kind of begins at the middle, kind of, and it's really good, all right? Like, the first sequence of the film is truly, truly breathtaking. The editing, the action is superbly tight and fantastically cathartic. There's an incredible cathartic reaction that you get watching very, very, very close one-to-one gunfights. Like they're in this very tight corridor and they're shooting at one another, and it's fantastic. Even in the big opera house, John David Washington's being fired at, and you've got the great score from Ludwig Göransson go. It adds this incredible rhythm, and you're like, oh my god, what is this? Is so good. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. This was my reaction in the theater. It was like that. Like, holy fuck. The movies are back. This is so fucking good. I don't get exactly what's happening, but I'm in. I'm on board. And whatever. You don't really understand what's going on, but it doesn't really matter because it's not that important to the plot. Just not that important to the plot. Some key parts are important, but the mission is successful, I guess. They're able to extract this guy somewhere, but the Russians, I think, whatever the Russian mercenaries, they kidnap him and they torture him, and then he decides to kill himself. So that's how the movie begins. He kills himself with a cyanide pill, and then they get the title Tenet. And then he wakes up. This is really, and you're like, okay, yeah, this is cool. I really like this. And then it just goes like a wet fucking fart, because as soon as he wakes up from that coma, He's in a boat. He's in a hospital in a boat. And you got Martin Donovan, I think that's his name, who works in the CIA, tells him, welcome to the afterlife, talks to him about Tenet. He shows this weird sign. And the protagonist is like, all right. The movie really just goes down to shit. It really does. Because then he goes to see Clémence Poésy, who plays a scientist, Barbara. He's now employed by a secret organization called Tenet. What is that organization? I don't know. And so Barbara shows what Tenet is, or inversion, or how bullets are inverted. I don't know. It's essentially there to explain the concept of inversion. You've got Martin Donovan, who explains what Tenet is, but not really. And you've got Clémence Poésy, who explains what inversion is, but not really, because they keep contradicting what inversion is. But she explains essentially what inversion is reversing an object's entropy. But it isn't reversed, because it wasn't reversed yet, but it's projected back. What the fuck? Okay, so inversion is to inverse an object's entropy, but it hasn't been inverted yet, because that object was actually projected by the future. Are you following me? And so the protagonist recognizes the maker of these bullets. His name is Sanjay Singh. So he says, well, okay, then show me what the fuck you're trying to show me, and I'll go to Mumbai to find out, you know, who made these bullets. Okay, you got that clue. So, but Tenet is essentially people that are able to, Barbara believes that these weapons are, the bullets are manufactured in the future, and they're projected in the present. Makes no sense. So, and then they're able to also see or predict the future through weird looking objects, I think. I have no idea what these weird looking objects were. It doesn't matter. He goes to Mumbai, and he says, I need a contact to get into Sanjay Singh's house because it's impenetrable. Whatever. He meets Neil, played by Robert Pattinson. They do this weird bungee jump, the weird inverted bungee jump thing. And then they meet Priya. And then Priya is another exposition character, who essentially just spoon feeds the protagonist exposition that, no, my husband, because his husband is Sanjay, her husband is Sanjay, my husband is not making these bullets. You are looking for Andre Sator, who's played by Kenneth Branagh. And you need to, in order to get to Sator, you will need to speak to somebody else. And so he goes to London, and he goes to speak to Michael Caine. And Michael Caine, who says, hippo-y, and eats steak, and tells the protagonist that in order to get to Sator, you must first be friends with Sator's wife and show her this Goya picture, and then see what happens. And so he goes to meet Sator's wife, played by Elizabeth Debicki, who then tells the protagonist that he needs to go to that he is only with Sator because she loves her son, her stupid son that she keeps talking about. Doesn't matter. And then he fights in the kitchen, whatever. Cool shit. And then he goes to, oh, fucking shit. She contacts him after she sees that he's a really powerful protagonist. He's able to take down Sator's enemies. He tells him that in order to get close to my husband, you need to do this thing at a Freeport, and then they crash a plane, and then he meets an inverted man, and he fights with the inverted man. He's like, what the fuck just happened? And then, oh, they add this algorithm. I have no idea what the fuck. They add this algorithm. Like, there's literally at one point in the movie, he goes back to Mumbai, and Priya tells him about the algorithm. Like, Sator has this algorithm. And then you're like, wait, what algorithm? What were they doing in the Freeport? What the shit? And then they talk about the algorithm as if we knew what the algorithm was, but we don't. And it's like, well, I mean, wait, what are we supposed to, what am I supposed to get? What am I supposed to grasp with this? But whatever. Pew, 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 pew. did you understand what the fuck I was trying to talk about? Because I didn't. And this was me the entire time, like okay, wait, like they're doing this, and then what is that? Oh, they're trying to steal a drawing. But why are they trying? Okay, so So they go to the Freeport to steal the real drawing from Sator. I think. But then they find the entropy machine. And they fight off against these people that are inverted, but they're the same people, I think. Jesus Christ. And then he gets close to Sator. He says, I can get to you plutonium, whatever the fuck. And whatever. I'll give up because it's just... It's insanely complex for nothing. So I tried to summarize the plot, but I have no fucking clue what I'm talking about. That's why I said spoiler alert, but not really, because I mean, how in the fuck can you resume a movie that keeps contradicting itself every single step of the way? All right. Yes, Nolan is known for making these very complex scenarios, but he always finds a way to link everything together so it all makes sense. If you look at Inception, if you look at Interstellar, Memento, even I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Inception was not confusing. Once you understand the dreams within dreams concept, it was very well explained because they use the character of Ariadne to ask questions to the characters who then clarify complex notions. It's a very innovative way to decomplexify a very complex and a very difficult subject to understand. Tenet, by the way, has a very difficult subject to understand, inversion, that then gets more complex as it goes along, and more complex and more complex and more complex until it just goes to shit. And then you're like, well, what are they doing with this? And what's happening with that? And then what the fuck? Truly. What in God's name? And yeah. What in God's name? And I was profoundly frustrated by it because the film contains, in my opinion, the most exciting action set pieces of Christopher Nolan's career. I don't think that he will ever top the level of artistry on display as the climax in Stalks 12 is incredible. I mean it, like, it's so fucking good. The opera scene in Kiev is perfect. Perfect. Even the close fist fights in the kitchen, that's very reminiscent of James Bond. The car chases, the inverted car chase, is so cool, so fucking cool, that there is something there. There is something that really catches your attention. And when it's there, when Tenet hits, it hits fucking hard, or it bangs, or it cooks, whatever you pretentious douchewads say these days. But when it hits fucking hard. God damn it. You're like, yes, yes, this is cool. This is awesome. Bring it, you know? And John David Washington and Robert Pattinson are both excellent in this movie. They are both they both have extreme charisma that really enlighten their performances. They're fantastically tactile during action sequences, especially John David Washington, who made both Robert Pattinson and John David Washington would make incredible James Bonds, by the way. I'm just going to say it. And they both have, like I said, terrific chemistry together that really helps the films to be a little bit more enjoyable. As far as the supporting cast goes, I really enjoyed Dimple Kapadia as Priya, even though she only spoon feeds exposition. That's her role in the movie. And what's his name? Aaron Taylor Johnson as Ives, who with Neil, with the protagonists, make a fantastic trio. However, because there's always a however, the villain sucks. That's one thing. Kenneth Branagh is absolutely fucking terrible. First of all, he can't do a Russian accent to save his career. We've known that before in Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit, in which he was a terrible villain, and you talk like this, Jack Ryan, whatever, what the fuck. And he talks exactly the same thing, the same way, in Tenet, but he brings a lot more caricature and Shakespearean, because he's a Shakespeare guy, play to his portrayal, and it's really bad. There's one scene in particular that really made me laugh when I saw it in theaters, and it made me laugh even more, I think, this time, is when he punches Kat in the gut, I think, and he calls her vengeful bitch, living off me, thinking that you're better, and then he just starts yelling, it's so exaggerated that it's not even compelling. And also, what's great about the sequence is that when he says vengeful bitch, you've got the beats, vengeful bitch. It's like perfect synchronization right there, but it adds to the unintentional comedy. And again, the villain, Saitor, is actually a Russian oligarch who can apparently talk with the future, because he came up with these turnstiles that are able to invert somebody. I'm not even gonna go there. But he plans to kill himself because he's dying of cancer. He plans to kill himself because if he doesn't want people, he doesn't want anybody else to have Kat, I think. Oh, no. He plans to kill himself to trigger Armageddon, I think. To trigger the end of the world or something like that. Because he's dying. All right? He's dying of cancer, and he doesn't want other men to be with his wife. I think that's what it is. It's so fucking dumb. Like, why would you trigger the end of the world? Why would you trigger the end of the world because you don't want other people to be with your wife? How fucking stupid is this? So he plans to kill himself, and he goes to Stalks 12, or his team goes to Stalks 12 to put some plutonium somewhere to that, so that when he kills himself, because his Fitbit his Fitbit is synchronized with the plutonium that's going to blow up and trigger the end of the world or nuclear holocaust. When his Fitbit stops, his heartbeat stops, something, I don't know, the end of the world's going to trigger. They're supposed to stop that. And it's all about a wife. And, of course, Kat, who's also very badly played by Elizabeth Debicki, will join the protagonist and Neil for her son. She has her own motivations out of this, because she wants to live with her son again. That's fine. But she keeps talking about her son. Everything she says is, my son, my son, my son, my son, my son. Who cares? Who cares? We get it. You love your son. Shut the fuck up already and join the mission. And at one point, she's had enough of Andre's bullshit that she kills him. But she did not have the go, she did not have the signal from Mahir, who was played by Himesh Patel. Himesh Patel was very good in this movie, I have to admit. And so she almost triggered nuclear holocaust because of her own stupid motivations. Imagine that. Raging wife kills husband who planned nuclear holocaust, and now she's the one responsible for this nuclear holocaust. Like, Imagine, just imagine if this selfless act would have triggered nuclear holocaust. My God. But no, of course, they managed to save it at the last minute because Neil went backwards in time to kill himself. Whatever, okay? He he went like forwards and backwards in time to die, to sacrifice his life. So the protagonist can say, it's fucked up. It is fucked up. Okay. Just trying to figure out what the movie's about will give you a splitting headache. Watching the film in the theater will give you a splitting headache and a tinnitus symptoms. And so the only thing that I have for you to say, or the only thing that, you know, some people will say, sorry, the only thing that some people will say is, well, you didn't get it. You know, Christopher Nolan explicitly said, don't try to understand it, feel it, you know? Here's the thing, jackass. Don't understand, it's fine. There are many movies that I don't understand, or I don't, certain things I don't get, like in 2001, The Space Odyssey, I don't really understand the ending, but I really like the movie. Whatever. Some things that I don't understand in certain films, that's fine. You know, there's always things that you have to interpret yourself. That's okay. Like David Lynch movies, plethora of things that I don't like, but I fucking love David Lynch. Or that I don't like, I don't understand, but I fucking love David Lynch. And in, you know, Christopher Nolan movies, there are many confusing stuff in his films as well. That's fine. It's a given. He's trying to be complex, but even, you know, feeling confusion, anger, uncontrollable laughter, unintentional laughter, and just an overall sense of dumbfoundery, I think are not great emotions for us to feel, right? Right? And so when you're telling me don't try to understand it, feel it, and I'm feeling all these emotions, I'm not really liking this movie. And I didn't really like Tenet. All right? I didn't like Tenet. And it's okay. I don't like a Christopher Nolan movie. All right? I'm not a Christopher Nolan shill, even though I love Christopher Nolan. I love Dark Knight Rises. I love Interstellar. I love Dunkirk. I love Memento. Prestige. The Prestige is incredible, right? He's made incredible movies throughout all of his careers. He's allowed to have a few duds, all right? Not all of his movies are going to be masterpieces. And this film really, oh God, really isn't the savior of cinema we all allegedly thought it was. And I'm not afraid to give Tenet a 2 out of 5 stars because it's got great action set pieces, great performances from John David Washington, Robert Pattinson, Dimple Kapadia, Aaron Taylor Johnson. And I mean, terrific action set pieces that really keeps you on edge, but the rest of the film is complete shit, complete and utter garbage. And audience engagement, even if it's confusing, audience engagement, David Lynch manages to confuse and keep his audience engaged all the fucking time. It's a feat that many filmmakers don't have. But audience engagement is key for a film like this. And unfortunately, you don't have it. Okay, everybody. Thanks for watching my review of Tenet. It was a little long. And that's fine. I like to review movies, so cool shit. I hope to see you guys back here on my next episode. I'm working on a few things right now, and I'll see you guys back here soon. All right. Bye-bye.